This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents The Dream Guy Next Door, written by Lauren Blakely, performed by Vanessa Edwin and Shane East.
Author's note: Steve Trout is a fictional baseball player. Chapter 1. January. One fine Saturday that summer. One thing you can count on for certain is the buzz when a new guy moves into the neighborhood. The other sure bet? That rumor will be rock concert loud if said newcomer is a stone-cold hottie. That's the chatter spreading through Duck Falls faster than an image of a sexy celebrity kayaking in the nude trends on Twitter. The two-story bungalow next to mine on Mallard Lane has been empty all summer, the kind of vacant that crackles and hums with burning questions. Will a family snag it? Will a developer nab it? Will someone flip it and sell it for a mint, driving up the value of all the other homes on the block, including the ones with chipped paint and cracked windowsills? Or will, pretty please with a serving of looks like Chris Hemsworth on top, a handsome single sweetie pie move in? The for sale sign transformed into a sold one in June, but the only crumb of intel we Duck Fallsians could scrape together was that an out-of-towner had made the winning bid. And so the speculation ramped up. Was the buyer male? And if so, what box did he tick off on forms? Married? Divorced? Widowed? Separated, but still cohabiting, so please keep him far away from me because that's not even remotely close to acceptable? How about on dating sites? Would ladies deem him to be a smooth-talking player? A cougar chaser? An escape artist? A too-good-to-be-truer? No one knew. No one even knew if he was straight. But by July, the notoriously tight-lipped realtor let slip three glorious words. Straight. Single. Male. With that settled, emphasis turned to the details. Valeria Rodriguez, owner of the small-batch ice cream shop in the town square, tossed out the first question. Would he be wildly clever? The next came from Yogini, Latanya Smith. Might he be deliciously funny? Polly at the yarn store went so far as to post on the town's online forum. Anyone know if he likes hedgehogs? I have 5 now, so I'm looking for a partner who will pet my hedgehog. Yeah, no one knew the answer to that. Or if that was a euphemism. Other inquiries have floated through the air. What if he's a know-it-all? A boring blowhard, a cheating jerk-faced cad. But what if he's kind, smart, sexy, and a god in bed? A woman can dream, dream of manicorns. And so the ladies do dream here in Duck Falls, population 15,474, and the beloved gateway to wine and olive country. Our hamlet is home to the best combo bookstore / wine shop on the California coast. The train tracks that run along the edge of town are so Instagram-worthy that you could selfie yourself for days. We love our eponymous ducks and have pink plastic kiddie pools in the town square for them to splash around in. Our sidewalks seem paved with silver, and I don't mean figuratively. We're home to a glitter factory. All that and a nose for sniffing out eligible bachelors. The whole town, it seems, likes to man-watch. It's the Duck Falls way. But it's not my way. I'm simply not in the market, nor am I even considering a trip to the man counter. No deli number needed for this woman. No rump roast or ham hock for moi. Shacking up, hanging out, and Netflix and chilling hold no appeal for me. But neither does seeming unsociable in this town that's been my home forever. It's a matter of striking the right balance between being politely interested in the town's favorite topic and being too interested. That means there's no escaping when I walk right into a circle of Duck Falls speculation one Saturday morning in early August. My spawn and I head into the boba tea shop next to the yarn store with no idea what awaits us. A wind chime tinkles as the door swings open, announcing our entrance. Good morning, Nina. I say to the chirpy blonde proprietor behind the counter. A very good morning to you, January, she says, her face packing a grin that translates into, I'm about to pepper questions in your direction at the speed of sound. She shifts her gaze to my kiddo. Hi, Wednesday. Don't let me forget to send you the new content for the blog later today. I wrote a piece on the merits of fruit tea versus black tea. My daughter smiles. It's her professional grin, and she wears it well. She's the web developer for half the town's businesses, it seems. I will put it on my Google task list to check in with you, she says. Google task list, Nina says with utter delight, clasping a hand to her chest. I love it. I squeeze my daughter's shoulder. This kid, I swear, she's a badass CEO at age 15. We order, and Nina makes the drinks, sliding me two tall cups locked and loaded right along with a serving of, so, what's the Mallard Lane dealio? Wednesday snags her mango boba, cutting in. Why don't you two chat? I'll wait outside. I have a podcast to listen to on new coding techniques.
New coding techniques?
Nina repeats, seeming tickled pink by Wednesday's habits and hobbies.
That's so...
She pauses, hunting about, perhaps, for a trendy word before she says, rad.
It's just rad.
Wednesday smirks. Super rad, she replies, as if that's something she'd actually say. She knows the value of keeping clients happy. I'll be right there, I call out as Wednesday pushes open the door. Once it's just the women over age 15, fine, we're both over 35, but barely in my case at 37, Nina waggles her drawn brows at me, and I know what's coming. She's married, so presumably she isn't scoping the dealio for herself. But with a newly single sister, it's no mystery why Nina's fishing for gossip in Mallard Lane waters for Maya. Has the guy next door moved in yet? And yes, she's angling to catch a big one. I swipe my credit card over the card reader. I haven't seen him yet, but I will keep my eyes open. There, that's just the right level of interest, isn't it? Nina squeeze.
You do that. I hear he's moving in today. I'm dying to know if he's perfect for you-know-who,
she says in a whisper, even though we're alone. Of course, that makes perfect sense. See, that's a balanced amount of interest befitting a businesswoman who needs to be in good graces with everyone. I gesture toward the storage room at the back of the shop. And you be sure to let me know if you still want me to build you those new cabinets. Nina's brown eyes go blank for a few seconds. Then they flash with awareness before she smacks her forehead.
Oh, I nearly forgot. I'll let you know who I'm going with soon, January. Either you or Big Beams Construction.
Big Beams, the new franchise of a national carpentry company that loves to underbid the locally owned shops with its 10% discount off the competition. With a smile that says, I hope it's me, but I know it won't be. I say goodbye, tea in hand, then head outside, shoving aside thoughts of price cuts I can't afford to give. Wednesday is parked on the green wooden bench in front of the shop, sipping her tea. Her dark blonde ponytail bounces as she jumps up and pops out her earbuds. Learn lots? I ask. I'm pretty much ready to hack into the town electrical grid now, if you need me to. I sigh contentedly. That's all I've ever wanted, to raise a cyber criminal. Well, you got it, she says, bumping her hip against mine as she lifts her cup and takes a drink. I wag a finger. No hacking, Missy. She rolls her green eyes, shooting me a droll look, the kind that teenagers are particularly skilled at firing at their mothers. I don't hack. She pauses, lifts her brows precociously, then adds, yet. You better not hack ever, I say. We make our way home, passing my friend Alva Chang's hair salon on the corner. This corner is the most silver-speckled in town, thanks to its intersection with the road to the Glitter Factory. The silver brick road to beauty. I wave through the window at Alva, who's the spitting image of Ali Wong. She raises one hand, a pair of scissors in it, and brings it to her ear without stabbing herself in the eye. Call me. Later, I mouth, knowing call me really means text her. Hacking isn't always bad, Mom, says Wednesday. How do you figure? It's not like anyone wakes up and says, gee, I hope I've been hacked this morning.
Because people don't understand the bennies.
I ruffle her hair, careful not to mess up her deliberately messy pony. No hacking, okay? It's taken me long enough to start a business. I don't need to compete with big beams and deal with the scourge that is my own hacker child. I'm not that kind of hacker. Don't be any kind of hacker. Unless you are hacking a recipe for boba tea, I say, savoring another sip, then glancing surreptitiously behind me, because Nina Clausen makes the best boba tea. Wednesday smacks her lips in agreement. She definitely does. Also, did you know mango boba is about 10 times better than non-mango boba? It's a proven fact. I arch a skeptical brow. Proven by whom? By sassy 15-year-olds who don't have to suffer through late nights paying bills and therefore don't need the survival boost only caffeine affords? I lift my oolong tea with the yummy bubble balls to make my caffeinated point, then slurp noisily. A slippery ball slides into my mouth and I catch it between my teeth, then show it off to her. Then I bite into the tapioca and swallow. Score! I can do that too, she says, then sucks on the straw, trying to capture the ball of bubble deliciousness right as it shoots into her mouth. She's victorious, showing off her prize before chomping down on it. I sigh happily and pat her shoulder. I've taught you so well, Spawn. You have, Spawner, but you are also wrong. Coffee is gross, tea is gross, and this is heaven. All beverages are better with fruit. And that's what I hope Nina says in her blog post. Ah, to be young and innocent, I declare, taking another life-sustaining sip of my beverage as we wander past the yoga studio where I've tried to shavasana with LaTanya. But if you continue to insist on this fruit tea is better blasphemy, I'll leave it to you to fend off all the questions about our new neighbor. She gasps, you wouldn't dare. Try me. She points at me like I'm a Death Eater. You're not that evil. I might be. We slow at the corner of Mallard Lane, then turn onto our street. I refuse to believe it, even of you. I tap my plastic cup to hers. Fine, you're right. I still like you too much to do that. But remember, that can change at a moment's notice. You've been warned. I think you're bluffing. You won't stop liking me because I am literally the best. Confidence. It's one of the many things I love about this kid, as well as how she makes my budding business look good online. If you keep sassing me about tea, I make no promises, I tell her. Feel free to call me the worst mother in the world. You're the worst. We stroll past a yard so lush and green that it looks like a jewel. Betty Juniper is watering the poppies in her garden as she shamelessly peers at the yellow home next to mine. As our steps grow louder, she whips her gaze our way. Excitement shimmers in her eyes and she calls out in a stage whisper, Psst, January, I need to talk to you. Oh, Betty always has good stuff to share. Hi, Betty, how are your flowers? My flowers? Oh, they're fine. She waves her free hand, the garden hose in the other apparently forgotten as it soaks her peonies and poppies and spatters the white picket fence. Betty, I peer at the ground, which is becoming more of a lake. You might want to reposition the hose. Yes, I think your poppies are donning their life jackets. Wednesday points to the vibrant orange flowers. Betty just blinks at her, so she tries again. Because they're about to be submerged. Yeah. This girl has no problem speaking her mind. Betty's slate blue eyes bug out as she finally notices the flood, which has broken the banks of the flower bed and is quickly turning into a bog. She fumbles to twist the nozzle so the deluge is more of a trickle. Then she drops the hose, and this woman who is so committed to a green thumb tromps across the lawn, giving absolutely no fucks what her navy blue wellies do to the wet grass. She must have something vital on her mind, to put it mildly. She forges past the fence and marches up to me on the sidewalk. Listen, about 8 minutes and 10 seconds ago, I saw a red sedan that looked suspiciously like a rental car drive by. Oh, that's how we're doing this. We're Miss Marpling the single man's every move. The car slowed outside the yellow house next to yours, but I couldn't discern whether it pulled into the driveway. But let me tell you, I got a look at the man behind the wheel, and oh me, oh my, he was a Kalamata olive. Earmuffs, I tell Wednesday, cue my daughter's second eye roll of the day. It's nothing I don't hear all the time, Mom. Even so, you don't need to know about the olive scale. With a third roll of her green irises, my daughter hands me her cup and covers her ears. Betty's expression is staunchly serious as she dives into a topic worth drowning her perfect grass for. We are talking full Kalamata here. You know what I mean? She deals me several girl-we're-in-this-together nods. I fasten on a smile, strapping in for the naughty Betty ride. You mean you wanted to sink your teeth into him? I've heard her scale many times, especially over the last month, since every time I've seen her, she asks if I've met the man yet. Oh, yes, she says, adopting a deep, berry white bedroom baritone. Sink them right into his tush. Hold on a hot second. How did you see his tush if he was driving? She laughs, shaking her head, all very silly child tricks are for kids. You don't have to see something to believe in it, she says. And I believe in your new neighbor's yummy butt. Putting up her hand, she forestalls a reply I wasn't going to make. But this isn't about me. This is for my youngest daughter, Missy. She's single again and, well, you know how it goes here. Something in the water causes a disproportionate number of women to spring from our wombs. That is true, I agree. It's our town's greatest gift and greatest mystery. We are blessed by a fertility goddess, only she seems a hell of a lot more fond of girl babies than of boys. No one quite understands the Athena phenomenon, but we all understand the effects. Duck Falls counts more female-owned businesses than most towns, more women than most towns, and more women in need of a man-bang than most towns. Might as well call it Fuck Falls. There you have it. The reason that new men in town, be they passers-by or residents, receive such avid interest. Or crazed, horny, give-it-to-me-now interest, I suppose. Betty continues her manquisition. Have you seen him yet? Can you verify if it's true? His biteable tush? That would be nice to know, but I haven't seen it. So you haven't met your new neighbor? Are you sure? As in absolutely positive? The skepticism is strong in this one. Scout's honor. I hold up two fingers, then I tap my daughter's hands, signaling that she can remove the earmuffs. I heard every word, she says dryly, and turns to our neighbor. Do you want me to text you an update on the olive scale later? Betty stares at my kid like she's given her the secret to having a flat belly while eating cake daily. Yes, would you do that? She asks, glomming onto this idea. I clamp a hand onto Wednesday's shoulder. She won't be issuing olive scale reports. But maybe consider it, says Betty. And maybe let me know before you tell the others. I want to line up Missy before anyone else can grab the olive. She mimes squeezing melons with her hands. I've always got my eyes open for Missy. She's a hoot and one of my favorite board game partners. And we'll make sure no one else gets the olive but Missy. Wednesday cuts in. I dig my claws into her shoulder, letting her know she's in big trouble now for egging Betty on. I begin to express how much that's not going to happen, but Wednesday interjects again. Maybe we can discuss it when my mom fixes those spice racks for you? Oh, yes, I see now. My child is an evil genius. They're still not closing properly, right? Wednesday asks, tilting her head with innocent curiosity as she closes the deal. Betty seems to like this win-win idea, too. Her smile spreads. They aren't? So frustrating. Turning to me, she asks, can you fix my spice rack later? And there's no need for another on-the-house job. I'll pay you. Sure, I have some time this afternoon to work on it. Great, I'll bake a coffee cake and we can catch up while you work. Sounds like a plan, I say. Olives and coffee cake, Wednesday adds. Spice racks and coffee cake, I correct. Everything and coffee cake, Betty says. As we leave, my neighbor picks up her hose and resumes drowning the flowers as she scouts down the street. Once we're a few houses away, Wednesday clears her throat. You think she considered that the guy in the rental car might be, oh, gee, someone just passing through? I laugh in agreement. That is exactly what I was wondering. Also, who needs a man that badly? I hold up my hand. Preach, sister. She smacks my palm, then downs more of her beverage. I like boys too, but I don't get the man's session this town has. Who cares if the neighbor is a hottie or a naughty? There are plenty of other things to do besides date. Exactly. I have taught you well. After more than a decade with a man who didn't love me, I am a happy camper to be single at last. Single and not in need of a date. Not in want of a man. Single and truly single. No men need apply. Not for anything. I've been teaching my girl the same thing, that you don't need another person to complete you. You are enough. I believe that with my whole heart. At the teal mailbox painted with ladybugs, an adorable addition courtesy of my best friend, Alva, we turn onto the stone walkway leading to our porch. In spite of myself, my eyes swing one house over. A red sedan is parked in the driveway. Perhaps Betty is Miss Marple after all. And call me Agatha Christie because I spy with my little eye a moving truck and a couple of burly men in blue Dockers lugging a black leather couch up the steps. There's no sign of the owner, though. We'll pop over later and introduce ourselves. See if they need anything, I say as I climb the porch steps. A door creaks and a voice rumbles across the yard.
Yes, this is a little quieter than New York City, but I have a hunch it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
I stop in my tracks. That voice. He sounds like an English hottie, like Tom Hardy, Daniel Craig, or Henry Cavill. What are the chances, though, that the face will match that kind of a voice? 1,000 to 1? No, 1,000,000 to 1. Easy. No way can any man have that yummy of a voice and as fine a face to go with it. He'll be a naughty. I turn around. There go the odds.
Chapter 2. Liam, a few days before. I'm a glass-half-full kind of person. Life gives you lemons. Don't just make lemonade. Make lemonade with vanilla bean extract, organic lemons, and homegrown honey from your own beehives and sell it at a roadside stand. You'll make a mint. Yes, I did that when I was younger. I made a pretty penny with Liam's roadside lemonade, thank you very much. Wake up well before the alarm clock. Log 10 extra miles on the bike as the sun rises and the birds chirp, and don't forget to stretch your hammies when you're done. Sounds like my day yesterday, and I like to think my heart thanks me for the cardio love I give it every morning. But being asked to diagnose a malady I don't treat, that ranks right up there with eating broccoli. That happens to me more than one might think. Not the consumption of broccoli. One of the greatest benefits of adulthood is never having to eat a veggie you hate. Goodbye, broccoli. Farewell, Brussels sprouts, and see you never, radish. But I can't escape people telling me about their corns, even though my work has nothing whatsoever to do with feet. My profession is paws. Trouble is, when your patients can't speak, their owners make up for it by flapping their gums, mostly about themselves. When someone's beagle has an allergy to fish, you learn about the owner's reactions to salmon, and have you ever heard about salmon allergies, and what should I do about it? When Rover comes in with an upset belly, you're the audience to a soliloquy from his master about his own digestive woes. To hear or pretend not to hear, that is the question. But ignoring a client goes against my nature, so I wind up listening to all sorts of ailments every time I examine Fido and Fluffy, Puss and Boots, and Lucy and Rex. I love my job, but this is one of my least favorite parts of it, and that's saying something, because I have to give rectal exams daily. Thankfully, that's something I don't have to do at the last appointment of my last day at my practice on the Upper East Side. It's simply needle time for Cecily. I administer a distemper shot to a sleek black cat decked out in a bejeweled velvet collar, then scratch the kitty's chin. There you go, Cecily. What a good girl. The cat lifts her head, eagerly accepting the chin rub. Give it up for the cat whisperer in the house, while her owner smiles demurely and taps her lip.
One more thing, Dr. Harris.
Yes, Blair? She flips her red hair off her shoulder and poses her question.
If Cecily is having trouble sleeping, like, say, she's waking up in the middle of the night and can't fall back asleep, what should I do?
Perhaps realizing her blunder, Blair straightens, clears her throat, then smooths a hand down the cat's back.
For her, what should I do for Cecily, the cat?
Of course. Because so many cats suffer insomnia, it's amazing there's not more research into the problem. Well, funny you should ask, Blair, I deadpan. I see a lot of cats who have trouble sleeping through the night.
Really?
Blair's green eyes widen, looking delighted by my answer. She must really want validation. Or really not want to see her internist for her sleeplessness woes. She'll be so disappointed to learn I can't prescribe Ambien. I nod, still straight-faced. It's true. It's a very common problem with nocturnal animals.
I had no idea.
She misses my irony completely.
What do you recommend, Doctor? Is there something she should take?
First of all, I recommend asking a human doctor, as in a doctor for humans. I don't say that, though, because as much as I dislike twofers, they're a part of life as a vet. And being a glass-half-full person, it's not that hard to pass along a little tip. Ah, I'm such a softy sometimes. If I were a country vet, I'd be that guy with a llama, a goat, and an emu roaming my garden. Come to think of it, raising an emu isn't such a bad idea. Will I have room for one in Duck Falls, I wonder? I shake my head, force my straying thoughts back to the present. There will be time later to daydream about patches of land and the possibility of flightless birds. For starters, you'd want to look at Cecily's sleep habits, I say, stroking Cecily's chin. Such an Upper East Side name for a cat. Ask yourself, is Cecily going to bed at a decent hour? Is Cecily drinking too much caffeine late in the evening? Is she turning off her phone? I rattle off all the bad habits that might lead to poor sleep for, cats. And more so, is she looking at her mobile in the middle of the night when she wakes up to use the litter box? That is the single biggest cause of sleep interruptions.
Litter box visits?
Blair asks, her brow creasing. No, it's the time the cat spends checking out email or Instagram on the phone while in the litter box.
I had no idea.
She sounds as if I've just dazzled her by pulling a rabbit out of a top hat. Yes, I say, nodding as I pet the soft, silky Cecily, who purrs with each stroke. Do you think that might be preventing her from nodding back off? The blue light of screens wakes up the feline brain.
The blue light of screens,
Blair says, like I've handed her the answer to all her problems. Twofer, indeed. Though Google would have told her the same thing. Maybe I should charge extra for the advice sessions. There you go. Maybe you, I mean, Cecily, I say dryly, finally meeting Blair's eyes and giving her the I see what you did there look, should stop peering at her phone in the middle of the night. A contrite grimace twists her face, and she dips her head, hand on her chest.
Sorry, it was me. I'm having trouble sleeping, and I do check my Insta at night.
Yes, I was able to put two and two together. But if the troubles persist, you should see your doctor, one who has an MD, especially if you're going to need to take something to aid your sleep. But hopefully some good, old-fashioned unplugging will do the trick. I'm sure all those pokes and finger tags will still be there in the morning.
Finger tags?
Her brow knits. Finger taps? Social media is right up there with broccoli for me.
Just tags, Dr. Harris. They're just called tags.
And the tags will still be there in the morning, I revise.
Of course.
She picks up her cat and deposits her in her carrier.
And I'll miss you, Dr. Harris. Good luck with your move.
Thank you. And I'll miss Cecily. She's a sweet cat. I show Blair to the door, saying goodbye to my last appointment after more than 10 years of taking care of the pampered pets of New York City. With my hand on the doorknob, a sense of melancholy settles in. But it's mixed with opportunity, too. I'm taking off tomorrow, packing up and heading home. Though leaving hasn't been entirely by choice, I'm determined to make the best of the change. It's all I can do. Besides, no matter how annoying it is to relocate, surely moving can't be as bad as eating broccoli. Or checking a finger tag in the middle of the night. I shudder. Nothing is that bad. But saying goodbye isn't easy either, even for an optimist. The next morning, I head up the stairs in my Murray Hill apartment building, contemplating the things that make moving hard. It's not the lifting. I hired movers. Nor is it the boxing and sorting of stuff. I hate clutter, so there's not much to sort. It's the changing of stuff, and the way packing up clothes, books, and plates makes you think about what you want in life, what's worth giving in on, what's worth giving up, what you truly need for the next year, the next decade, even. This minute, though, I need to do one last check of my apartment before I hand over the keys to the next owner. I slide mine into the lock and step inside. An ache slams into my chest as I look around at the empty space. There's a particular feeling that comes from standing in the skeleton of the home you lived in for a decade. It's awareness that a part of your life is ending, that you're letting go of something, perhaps a piece of yourself. That awareness burrows deep into my psyche and digs far into my gut too, the sense that not only a chapter, but a whole book is ending. I have no idea what the opening scene in the next story will reveal, or if it'll be something I want to read. But it's not optional. It's the required text for the next phase of my life. Parking my hands on my hips, I draw a deep lungful of air, surveying the hardwood floors, the bare white walls, the cupboards. My eyes sweep over the space that now contains nothing. Nothing at all. No furniture, no art, no bookshelves. But I can so clearly see what was here a few days ago, before the movers packed up everything. The black leather couch that's on its way across the country. It'll look smashing in my new bungalow in Duck Falls. Or will it? Now that I think about it, maybe I should have let go of that couch. It's not best suited to my life these days. The leather and steel that's perfect for a man cave doesn't exactly work with a kid who wants to cuddle up on a comfy sofa and watch cartoons for the gazillionth time. I picture the glass coffee table that sits on simple chrome legs, now also whooshing its way west. That will look good too, won't it? Except perhaps glass isn't the best choice either. Seems I have to spray the tabletop clean 12 or 300 times a day. I swing my gaze to where the replica Eames chair sat and... damn it. Why did I keep that when it's already acquired so many nicks and scratches? Maybe it could go in the office of my new practice. Right, sure, great idea. A place crawling with literal animals is no better than a place crawling with one particular species, the dastardly and destructive variety known as a young boy. Shit, I should have donated all of my stuff. Maybe I can find a home for it. Who out there wants leather, glass, and steel furniture? Bachelors in need, playboys furnishing their man pads, perennially single men in the city. No one. Absolutely no one. I groan, cursing myself for holding on to those things. Keeping them 3 years ago made sense. Keeping them now is the height of foolishness. But no matter. Once I'm in California, I'll pop into an IKEA, replace everything, be in and out with new stuff in a jiffy. Except I've only been in an IKEA once. I needed a map and a flashlight to find my way to safety. I'll gird myself this time. Study the routes. Plot in advance. Surely I can navigate a big box store, even a labyrinthine one. I take a breath, talking back to my momentary furniture panic. Everything will be fine. All I need to do is get through this final look-see, and then I'll be on my way, ready to make the best of a tough situation. I pace across the apartment, making sure nothing was left behind. That's what I came to do this morning. Not wonder about the suitability of a stylish sofa or a sleek table. I step into the bedroom that was home to my king-size bed mere days ago. That too is in transit. So is my son's twin bed, a bed that I didn't need until a few years ago. But now it's making its way to the other coast, along with the black comforter set, because Thor sheets are no longer cool. Dinosaur sheets were decidedly uncool the first time we went shopping for bedding. And apparently all the other colors at Bed Bath & Beyond are unacceptable to the discerning fourth grader. I never thought I would know about the sheet preferences of the grade schooler set. Now I do, as well as whether dope or epic is the cooler word. Dope is. I turn into the bathroom, opening the medicine cabinet and checking the shower one more time. There's nothing left. I am well and truly ready to go. I need to go. And I want to go. Still, it's hard. I try to shake off that clutch of longing, that knot in my chest that wants to tether me here, to this city that's been my home. I head to the front door and set a hand on the knob for the last time. Goodbye, bachelor pad, I say. But it hasn't been a bachelor pad for a few years. Stepping out, I tug the door shut behind me, closing the book on this story. I bound down the steps, slipping away from my Manhattan life that was once rich with dinners out 5 nights a week, 2-hour visits to the gym, and shows, concerts, wine and cheese tastings, plays and parties, art galleries, and dates, lots of dates. Out on a sun-drenched Park Avenue, cabs and buses trundle by, My son punches my cousin Oliver's arm, adamantly making a point, it seems. Aunt Jane stands next to them, regarding the two with amusement over the top of her glasses. Quick-witted, gossip-loving, cat-collecting Aunt Jane. She's another part of this city that I'll miss.
No! Steve Trout is the greatest player of all time!
My son insists. Indignation spreads across Oliver's face, as it well and truly should, at the suggestion that a modern-day baseball player could be the greatest of all time, especially someone who plays for the enemy. How could you even say such a thing? Oliver stares at Ethan, bewildered, then at me, thrusting a cup of coffee in my hand. What have you been teaching him, Liam? I shake my head and raise my free hand, denying responsibility for my son's terrible choices when it comes to baseball hero worship. Trust me, I didn't teach him that sort of blasphemy. I take a vital drink of the coffee, needing the blast of energy it'll bring me. Oliver hands me a bagel next, and I nod my thanks. My son looks up at me, all big blue puppy dog eyes and shaggy blonde hair. He's hardly like me at all, but the DNA test made it clear that neither hair color nor eye color matter. He's mine, and I'm his.
Dad, you like Steve Trout, don't you?
I set a hand on his forehead, as if I'm checking his temperature.
Liking a Dodger? Are you feeling okay?
He huffs.
Steve Trout is the coolest.
Oliver clears his throat.
The coolest, he says, stabbing his finger in the air to make his point, is Mariano Rivera, a Yankee through and through.
Aunt Jane weighs in, clearing her throat.
The coolest is Reggie Jackson. He was also a Yankee for a spell.
Oliver quirks a brow.
Jane, you're not even old enough to have watched him play.
With narrowed eyes, she taps him on the head, as he deserves.
Rephrase, please.
Oliver rearranges his features, barely looking contrite, though.
I mean, how can he be your favorite? He played ages ago, well before you started watching the Yankees.
I can read. I've read plenty of baseball history books.
I catch Oliver's gaze and mouth. You're in so much trouble.
And all those books say the Yankees are better than the Dodgers, Oliver adds.
Ethan rolls his eyes, laughing.
You're all so weird. It's not like that with me and my friends. We like who we like. Doesn't matter what team they play on. Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox.
I cover his mouth with my hand and look at Aunt Jane and Oliver.
Forgive him. He knows not what he speaks.
My son licks my hand. Laughing, I peel it off him as he cackles.
Gross, I say. You're like a dog.
Dancing a victory jig, Ethan says.
Sounds like a compliment. Also, what did you think would happen when you put your hand on my mouth?
He makes a valid point,
Oliver puts in, clapping my son on the back, then pointing at me.
You were kind of asking to get licked, Liam. Evidently, I must ask for it every day, since I get licked every day.
Usually by a cat, though, I say offhand.
And now all the cats of Duck Falls will be giving you a lick,
Aunt Jane says, a soft and slightly sad smile curving her lips. She's my mum's sister, and she moved here from England a few years ago.
I'm glad you're going there to help out.
I'm glad I can help too,
I say on a rough swallow, choking back the reasons why I'm helping out, reasons I fervently wish were different.
But, on that note, I should go.
Aunt Jane wraps her arms around me and plants a quick kiss on my cheek.
If you make me linger at a goodbye, my mascara will run, and I will be most upset. Besides, we'll get together for Christmas and other holidays,
she says, her voice breaking, something I rarely hear it do.
Yes, we should be getting on.
The airport waits for no one, I say, a note of sadness slipping into my voice that I attempt to shove away before anyone can notice it. At least I hope they won't notice it. This patchwork of family that I have here in New York. They've been my people for the last several years, and it'll be weird not to see them whenever I want.
I guess this is it. And in all seriousness,
I will miss you, I say to my cousin, emotions bubbling to the surface momentarily. Oliver scratches his jaw and blows out a long stream of air, his tone turning serious too.
Hate to admit it, but I feel the same.
We might give each other a hard time, but we both know the score. We've depended on each other. He's been a regular presence in my life here in New York for the decade I've called this city home. We're two transplants here in the States who've been making our way in Manhattan. But now I've been called back to the other side of the country to responsibilities I never expected, but ones I can't turn down. I haul him and Aunt Jane in for a last hug, then say goodbye to this city. I'm ready. I'm sure of that. As much as you can ever truly be ready to leave a city of millions and return to a small town with a kid you didn't even know you had until 3 years ago. Life has a habit of raining lemons, and it's up to you to make lemonade. You can't debate the next chapter in your life for too long when you've got a kid on your own. Your job as an only parent morphs by the second. Sometimes your head cheerleader, sometimes a psychiatrist, and sometimes a chief janitor. After Ethan and I settle into the second row of the plane, the flight attendant hands him an orange juice.
"Thank you,"
he says with a gap-toothed grin. He lifts the cup to his lips, but it wobbles, and he spills the drink on the armrest, the seat, and the floor.
"Sorry, sorry, sorry."
The apology flies out of him at max speed. "No worries, we'll clean it up," I say. This is a piece of cake compared to what I clean up daily. No, hourly, at work. But before I can track down a napkin, the superhero known as a first-class flight attendant, who has radar to rival an FAA antenna, swoops back over with a cloth and wipes down the seat, then the armrest, and the floor.
"All better,"
she says with a lip-glossed smile and a cheery grin. My son smiles back.
"Thank you so much."
She gives a little curtsy.
"You're quite a gentleman. And your accent is adorable."
She makes a little bopping gesture at his freckled nose.
"Thanks,"
he says as he flops back into his seat.
"I'm American, but my mom was British and my dad is too."
He pats my shoulder as if the flight attendant might be confused about who his father is. She shoots a bemused look at both of us.
"That would definitely give you an accent."
Ethan pokes my arm, then slides into a right proper imitation of me, waggling a chiding finger.
"Now, don't forget to do your science homework, young man. Science is quite possibly the most important subject."
"Well, it is," I say, standing my ground.
"I couldn't agree more. Your father is right,"
the attendant says, leaning in a little closer, her eyes on Ethan the whole time, and I like that she talks to him directly. That's how it should be.
"Now, promise me something, little man."
"Sure,"
he says, sitting up straighter, eager for her command. She does that air bop again.
"That you'll let me know if you need anything. Anything at all."
Her voice drops.
"Like ice cream. Or brownies. Or a special movie." "Ice cream, brownies, and a special movie, please."
Gently, she pats his head.
"I'll make it happen."
She stops at the row behind us, and I turn to Ethan, chief cheerleader kicking in as we click in our seatbelts. "Okay, so this is it. Soon we'll get warm nuts. And you know what that means?" He giggles.
"You said warm nuts."
"Yes, I did. And they're delicious," I say, keeping a straight face. "Also, they're a symbol, a demarcation between one thing and another."
"Dad, nuts."
He can't stop laughing. "Yes, nuts. A tasty snack," I say, keeping a deadpan expression. A cackle bursts from him, clearly located in the seismic epicenter of his funny bone. He grabs my arm.
"You can't say that."
"I can, and I did. And you want to know why I like warm nuts?" More chuckles emanate from Ethan, but he tries to collect himself.
"Why?"
"Because it means we're off. We're making our ascent, heading to our next adventure." His expression turns worried.
"What if I miss New York? And Florida, too?"
The subtext isn't lost on me. New York is all he's known for the last few years. Florida was all he knew before then. But laughing is something he's done in both places. Or so I was told. "We can always visit," I say, giving him my best, "we've got this" smile, even though there's no need to visit Florida now. Nothing familiar for him there.
"We should visit New York then,"
Ethan says with a nod, resolute. And I couldn't agree more. We'll still have people in New York who we'll miss. "We will absolutely come back and visit."
"California is fun though. I've liked it every time we've visited Nan and Pop, but do you really think it'll be an adventure?"
I stroke my chin, pretending to consider this deeply, but speaking from the heart. "Let's see. We're moving to the town where I spent my last 2 years of high school. We're going to see Nan and Granddad a lot."
"Now that I'll be seeing him regularly, can I call him Pop instead? It's easier. I like Pop better."
"I'm sure he'll be just fine with that," I say, picturing my dad, his sturdy demeanor, his tough-as-nails approach, and his fierce love of his grandkids. He won't care at all. Plus, he has other matters on his mind.
And my sister and her kids will be there. And we have a pool. Hello, a pool with a water slide. You'll love the pool. Of that, I'm sure. Our building in New York had a gym and an indoor pool that was practically Ethan's second home. He's always loved the water.
I might be a fish, he says.
Please, you're a dolphin.
You're right. Dolphins are cooler, too.
You can go full dolphin in California. So yeah, let's make a promise that we won't let it be anything but a great adventure. A smile spreads immediately on his face. He offers a fist for knocking. When you're a fourth grader, handshakes have been passé for ages.
Then I'm up for adventure, he says.
A few minutes later, as the plane taxis on the tarmac, the helpful attendant swings by once more, stopping at our seats.
I forgot to ask, what takes you gentlemen to California today?
Ethan points at me.
My dad is making me move.
Ah, so someone doesn't want to.
At first I didn't, but he said it'll be an adventure, so maybe it won't be so bad.
Moving is definitely an adventure. I was born in California, then I moved to Louisiana, and then to Missouri, and then to Alaska, and then to Arizona. And they were all adventures.
Did you like moving so much?
She seems to mull it over.
It can be hard to leave your friends. But you know what I love about moving?
He sits up straighter in his chair.
What? New experiences. New people and new chances.
I like meeting new people, he says.
Then I bet you'll love it.
The attendant takes her seat by the door while Ethan settles in with his AirPods and a game on his phone, swiping across the screen in hot pursuit of candy or boxes or gems or other absurd things. I pop on an audiobook on the science of sleep. Soon we're soaring into the sky. As the jet reaches higher, I repeat in my head, new experiences, new people, new chances. Even though this move is about my family, those words still resonate with me. That's where the true awareness comes in. An awareness of what I'm choosing to step into and what I'm choosing to leave behind. After years of being devoutly single and then a few more of being a devoutly single dad, I've decided to embrace a particular aspect of this move, a brand new chance. I'm ready to date again. Dare I say, I'm ready to find the one, to settle down. Call me a unicorn. I'm the guy who's looking to get hitched. Maybe I'll find her on the other side of the country.
Chapter 3. January. That fine Saturday in August when the hottie moved next door. I can frame a door, work a power saw, and build a cabinet. Call if you need someone to fix a sink, repair a pipe, and change a tire. I'm wired for the practical. I'm not a swooner. My brain doesn't go upside down when I see a handsome man. I don't faint over muscled arms or chiseled jaws, and I don't melt over buttery British voices and GQ faces. I did the whole swoon over a pretty boy routine with my ex, and that was a mistake akin to installing a toilet without connecting the pipes. Awesome child, notwithstanding. I learned my lesson, so I refuse to flutter my lashes or hump a hottie's leg, especially when he's my new neighbor. But giving him a welcome gift? I should have thought of that sooner. It would be terribly rude if I didn't pop over right the hell now with a welcome to the neighborhood basket of goodies. After I close the front door behind me, I set my boba tea on the bright orange coffee table, a flea market find that I painted with Alva. I take a deep, fueling breath, snapping my fingers, trying to think. I need to give him a gift. What do we have handy? Think. Wine? That's always safe. Unless someone is an alcoholic. Some of the honeysuckle soap I made last week? That could work. But will he suspect I'm secretly saying, you smell? Maybe something from my garden. Cilantro? Arugula? Tomatoes? Who doesn't love tomatoes? How about you offer to hammer anything he needs nailed? That could be your welcome gift, Wednesday says as she heads to the kitchen and drops her plastic cup in the recycling bin. Grabbing mine, I follow suit. Or there's a half-full bottle of fancy mustard in the fridge, Wednesday adds. Offer him that. I'm going to pretend you didn't just say that. I grab a pretty wicker basket from the counter, remove the loaf of bread in it, then grab some scissors. Are you going to frolic over there with your basket like the Easter Bunny? No, Spawn, I'm going to give him some cilantro and daisies. Nothing says welcome to the neighborhood like the most hated garnish and the nastiest smelling flowers, she says. I shoot her a sharp look. Wrong. Everyone knows sunflowers are the stinkiest flowers. Oh, you're right. Those are gross. I scurry across the kitchen to the back door. Why are you acting like you're about to run a race? She calls out. I snap my gaze back to her as I dart onto the doormat. Because, I say, flapping my free hand, we have a new neighbor and we have to give him something. She follows behind as I rush to the garden in our yard. So you're giving him vegetables? I shoot her a look. Everyone loves fresh veggies. I kneel beside my garden beds, snipping some cilantro, setting it gently in the basket, then adding some radishes. Radishes are making a comeback. I've seen them all over the menus at both fancy hipster restaurants and cheap hole-in-the-wall joints. No, she says. Everyone loves peaches. Everyone loves cookies. Not everyone loves veggies. I flap my arms around, gesturing to the yard. Well, I don't have cookies or peaches. Maybe get some, then? I'll start with veggies. He can make a salad. Awesome. Radish salad sounds delish. Let me know if I can have some, too. You're now banned from salads for your impudence, I say, and snip some daisies, too. She pumps a fist. I'm going to make sure you hold to that promise. Also, Dad didn't love veggies, Wednesday points out. I point at her. No, he was allergic to them. Big difference. Tomatoes gave him hives. Cilantro gives me nightmares. Laughing, I shake my head. If that's the worst of your nightmares, consider yourself lucky. If I never eat cilantro again, I'll consider myself very lucky, she retorts as I pluck some radishes. You don't eat cilantro at all. You refuse anything that includes it. And with panache, too. I launch into an imitation. Thanks, but I'm going to decline the cilantro lime rice. Also, I believe radishes are the new black. Wednesday shakes her head. No, candy is the new black. Boba is the new black. Black is the new black. Radishes are the new brown. I set the flowers in the basket alongside the veggies. Then I stand and tilt my head. The new brown? As in no one's favorite color. Mark my words, he'll love the radishes. I leap up the steps, Wednesday on my tail. I'm going with you just to laugh when he crinkles his nose at them. I roll my eyes, stop at the sink, wash the radishes, dry them, then line the basket with a blue checkered cloth. After setting the radishes and the cilantro in next, I snip the stems of the daisies, find a piece of string, and tie it around the flowers. Then I reach for a bar of honeysuckle soap and add it to the mix. Voila! Don't say I didn't warn you. I leave the gift on the counter for a moment. Be right back. Hurrying down the hall, I hightail it through my bedroom and pop into the bathroom, where I check my reflection and smooth my brown hair. I am not in the market for a man. No way, no how, not at all. But one should look one's best when meeting the new neighbor. That's just common courtesy. I tuck a strand of loose brown hair behind my right ear, touch up my lip gloss, dust on some powder, and finally peer left, then right. I run a hand along my neck. I'm 37, so my neck is still mostly smooth. My forehead, though, I could go for Botox if I wasn't terrified of needles. I rely on self-administered Bangtox instead. So I finger comb my hair over my forehead. Ready, I say softly to my reflection. A tingle dares to rush down my chest, heating me up, and I blanch. What was that? I set a hand on my chest. I barely got a good look at him. I cannot be having a reaction to my neighbor already. I'm not. I ignore that tingle. No, I do better than ignore it. I tell it to go the hell away and never come back. There, that'll teach my body to have reactions to sexy neighbors with swoony voices that I do not, cannot, will not swoon over. I turn on my heel and leave. But not before I duck into my closet, yank my t-shirt over my head, and pull on a pink V-neck. Well, pink is my favorite color. I head to the kitchen to grab the basket. Shall we? Wednesday peers up from the couch, eyeing me over her phone. I'm a pawn in your scheme.
And how's that? You're just using me to make it look like you're not totally checking him out. A blush crawls up my cheeks. I'm not checking him out. She wiggles a brow. Tell that to the jury. Also, you offered to come along, I say as I hoist the basket on my hip and grab a hammer from the orange table, just in case Wednesday was right. We head out the front door, and I let the screen door fall behind us with a resounding click. I don't need to tell anything to a jury because the judge of me knows the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'm not totally checking him out. I'm slightly checking him out. And I cannot wait to tell my friend Alva all about this sexy man next door.
Chapter 4. Liam. All things being equal, Ethan is pretty content here. First goal accomplished. Wait, content is the wrong word. Jazzed might be better, since he's conducting a full inspection of the pool.
I need to go swimming now,
he announces, bending over the edge and dipping a hand in the water. I desperately hope this, the fun he'll have swimming with me and soon with his cousins when they come over, will help him love his life here and not miss what he had in Florida. It's a life I know little about, but one I imagine was full of endless hours in the water. How about later instead of now? We should go talk to the movers, make sure they know where to put everything.
Fine, but later I want to swim. Please.
And you will, Dolphin, I say. He makes a flipper sound as I usher him back into the house. We stayed at my parents' place last night, so we could arrive here rested and ready to meet the movers. I stop to chat with them now. They tell me it'll be about 20 minutes to assemble the beds they brought in, so they'll be busy for a while. I thank them, stopping to grab a picture frame from a box. Simple, shiny metal, but I'd recognize it anywhere. I set it on the coffee table. A pang of longing punches at my chest as I look at the shot of Ethan with his arms wrapped around his brown and white cattle dog from years ago. What was that day like? How often did he hug that dog? Swim with her?